Sutar recovers. And a break here for Riley McGree. It's on for Matthew Leckie. Matthew Leckie cuts back inside. One way, then the other. And he scores for Australia. Matthew Leckie embraces the moment for the Socceroos. Backus just needs to retain the ball. Moy. And there it is. Australia has found a way, found its way to the elite 16 of world football. The country can keep on dreaming. Australia's jubilation and a slice of World Cup history. The Socceroos of 22 join the golden generation of 06.
Good morning, everybody. Oh, boy, what a morning it's been for sports fans. The Socceroos are through to the knockout phase of the World Cup. Who would have thought that? Only 2 weeks ago when France went wooshka four times past us and got us in the onion bag. But not Graham Arnold's men are through, and it has been some sort of morning here in Melbourne Town. Can you imagine being in Doha, Qatar for this? The Aussies on site will be going off their absolute chops. That's going to be the feature event in the card today. Don't you worry about that, the Socceroos performance. In fact, we're getting straight to Simon Hill, the voice of football in this country, who I'm sure is going absolutely bananas on the back of the performance by the boys this morning. Simon, great to have you with us. How are you feeling?
A little bit stunned. Obviously, absolutely thrilled that they've got through. I'm not sure any of us expected it, really, but there they are, and I'm with about 300 Green and Gold Army members. I'm on tour with them in Doha, and we're about to hit a local bar and have a few beers to celebrate. So it should be quite the night, I think.
I can't imagine the energy in the room, Simon, from all the Green and Gold Army fans who are there. We've made the commitment to get across and support the lads and Arnie through the journey. And to see that goal go in from Matthew Leckie, that must have been absolutely something.
Well, it was, and even more so because we just learned, obviously we're keeping an eye on the other game between Tunisia and France, and you know, the scenario we all thought was that Australia needed a draw because we all expected France to beat Tunisia. So we just heard that Tunisia had scored literally 60 seconds beforehand. So, you know, we knew really that the Socceroos were going to have to win the game, or at least that's the way it seemed at that particular point. And then, bang, up pops Matt Leckie and scores an absolutely brilliant goal. And even though it was a bit tense at the end, they defended manfully again, two consecutive clean sheets, which is not an easy thing to do at a World Cup. Harry Suter, immense. Milos Steganek, immense. The whole team, just absolutely extraordinary. And I can't even put into words what this achievement means for football in Australia, because with the greatest respect to this squad, they're not the golden generation of 2006. But they're making history before our very eyes. And I'm delighted for Graham Arnold in particular, because he's had an awful lot of flack. The team has been, you know, written off on many occasions. A lot of people didn't even think we're going to make the World Cup. And here we are in the best 16 teams in the world. It's incredible. And loving the pictures coming back this way, by the way, from Fed Square in Melbourne. That's football passion. That's what this game means to everybody, including Australians.
Oh, they're going off their chops at the moment at Fed Square, have been all morning. It's quite remarkable. Whitey, good morning to you. I didn't even welcome you before, but it's been one of those mornings. And you're right about the qualification phase, and there was some grey area about whether or not we'd get there. And, you know, what's done is done, I suppose. But this group, there's something special about the quality of spirit in this group from what we can see through the screen. Being there, watching it up close, can you feel that?
Yeah, look, it's very much a collective. It's always been a collective, to be honest, the Socceroos. You know, they're a team that is drawn from all four corners of the globe. And when they get in the national team camp, they're all good friends. I don't think there are too many egos amongst this particular group. And I'll give you two specific examples of that. One is Martin Boyle, who, of course, was ruled out with injury cruelly just before the tournament started. He's not been sent home to work on his fitness or to get right. He stayed in camp with the squad. He's there on the pitch with the team after every single game. And another guy, Trent Sainsbury, who didn't make the squad, perhaps a bit controversially, he could have starred home and skulked. He's in the stands with us, along with his family, cheering the team on. So that shows you just, you know, what a bond these guys have. And, you know, maybe that's worth that extra 1% in the really critical moments. And we certainly had a few of those today, and definitely did against Tunisia a few days ago as well. And it's got them over the line. So it's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, now we await to see who we get in the round of 16. It could be Argentina. It could be Poland. It could be Saudi Arabia. Who cares? you know, who knows how far this team can go?
I think, Simon, the interesting part, trying to think about all the positive ramifications there's going to be from this. But even just from an A-League perspective, to have A-League players in this team not only playing but actually having a big impact on the World Cup, that has to validate the A-League in a lot of ways and hopefully give it some currency.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I've just tweeted that, you know, saying one more thing. There were seven members of the starting lineup of the Socceroos tonight that began their careers in the A-League men's competition.
There you go.
Nine, if you include two that came off the bench. And Denmark had a team containing players from Manchester United, Barcelona and Tottenham Hotspur. So, you know, the local comp ain't that bad, is it? Let's be honest. And it gets a rough ride because people are used to watching the Premier League or the Serie A or La Liga. And I understand that. You know, people have heritage from all over the world. But our competition ain't half bad. And the players that we're producing are clearly capable of competing on a global stage with the very best of them. So, you know, obviously one of the hopes from, or the spin-offs of this qualification is that we're going to get people who perhaps take an interest in our local competition. I know it's about identity as well, and you've got to feel an attachment to a team. But there's certainly, you know, not much wrong with the quality of the competition that's being played in Australia locally.
Yeah, and I think that attachment, that connectivity is something the A-League can do better with general sport fans, but I think they've got a better chance at it now because of this validation. And I think, Simon, the other part of it too is, and I'm interested in your views on this, as a sort of more a general view of football, is that when we lost to France, almost the blame was on the development, the grassroots. It's got to, you know, football in Australia's got to change. But for me, it felt like, oh, that, not so much that's an excuse. It's like, oh, here we go again sort of thing. But when we actually get through, I think it actually carries more weight. Hey, this is what we can do when we haven't quite got things right. Imagine what we could do if we do get it right at the grassroots. I think you've got a better chance of getting it right now because of what's happened over the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, you're right. You know, all this stuff is interconnected. And of course, you know, a lot of people complain about, oh, the development pathways are wrong and the coaching's not good enough and, you know, the league structure's not right. And all those things I completely agree with. There's one really good way to change that, and that is for people to invest their time and money into supporting the local game with their dollars. You know, the better the A-League is, the better the academies will be to bring through those players, the bigger the league will be, and the more opportunities and pathways there will be for both our male and female players. And too many people are content to sit on the sidelines and throw hand grenades at the game without, you know, constructively trying to help. Now, I'm not saying that they don't, you know, contribute at grassroots level, but you know, what our game needs really is to be fully professionalised at all levels. That's where we're lacking. I mean, you look at the team that we played on match day one, France. They have 46 professional clubs, a national academy that's one of the best in the world at Clairefontaine. All their clubs have absolute top-class facilities. You know, we still, as I said again on Twitter, some of our pro clubs still train on open fields and play on cricket ovals. You know, we own nothing as a sport. We get by on the smell of an oily rag. And it's got to change. And it just shows today, even with all those obstacles that we have placed in our way as a sport in Australia, we're still competing on the world stage. It's absolutely extraordinary. I can't overstate it. This is something akin to a minor miracle that has happened here in Qatar. And I hope it makes people sit up and take notice and try to help.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I hope it does. Because you're right, it is a minor miracle. And even watching the first 25 minutes this morning, I was thinking we might need a minor miracle, Simon, to get through from Denmark, who looked pretty strong, had a lot of chances early doors. And I thought, oh, we're under the pump here. But we just found a way.
Well, we did. And, you know, that's becoming the hallmark of this Socceroos team. They found a way against Tunisia. In many ways, that game was more difficult than the one tonight. I was actually... purely from a professional football point of view, I was actually very disappointed with Denmark apart from that first 15 minutes. I thought they were dreadful. But that's to take nothing away from the Socceroos. They were super structured, super organised. Graham Arnold has got them clearly playing not just for each other, but for him as well. And, as I say, who knows where this team can go? Let's see what the round of 16 brings. But in the meantime, we'll enjoy tonight because we have a lot of down moments in football in Australia. It's a sport that gets a lot of brickbats. So occasionally when the bouquet is thrown, we've got to enjoy the moment, and we will tonight.
Yeah, catch it and run. And before we let you go, and I know you want to go and celebrate, and we do absolutely appreciate your time on the back of the performance this morning. We know there's lots going on over there from an Australian perspective. This Harry Soutar fella, I must admit, I'd never heard of him, Simon, and all of a sudden he's my favourite man on the planet. This comeback from injury, his ability to impact games, his competitiveness, his size, his strength, he's something else, this boy.
He is. And again, you can thank Graham Arnold for that because he went searching for players with Australian heritage. Harry is one of those. He's got an accent that's straight out of Glasgow rather than Gippsland. But his family were born in Australia. They're here all supporting him, by the way. They're staying in our hotel and loving every moment of it. And he's been a real find for Graham Arnold. He's, defensive rock at the back. Obviously, his height helps with that. He's a threat on set pieces in an attacking sense as well. And he's very quickly become a part of the fabric of this Australian team. So it's absolutely terrific.
Well, we want to let you go and celebrate with the Green and Gold Army and enjoy what's been one of the great moments in Australian football and Australian sport overnight with the win over Denmark. Thank you very much for your time, Simon. Have a great rest of the tournament. Hopefully we touch base soon.
Pleasure, guys. Have a good night.
You're a good man. I reckon you might. Simon Hill with us over there in Doha with the Green and Gold Army leading the touring party, and I reckon they'll be having a hell of a time on the back of that. Quite something this morning, won't it? Quite something.
It is. It is remarkable, and I've made the comment now for a long time. I thought it was an achievement in itself for Australia to actually make the World Cup.
Well, we were lucky, and Simon alluded to that before.
Yeah, but it's not just the luck or, having to do it a really difficult way. Just the fact of where we are as a nation in football compared to so many other countries, it had to be celebrated that we actually got there. But then to actually now get to the last 16, and as Simon said, it's not the big names of 16 years ago, but they seem to be a team. And I think that's what's helping get them through. And considering they come from all corners of the globe to come together, Graham Arnold needs to get a lot of praise for what he's doing because he gets whacked. He gets belted so often in the press from the football media. I'm not saying he's got a job for life, but he's got to have a job now for a very long time in that role.
There's a suggestion that there's interest from the US, the MLS teams, for Graham Arnold from the back of what he's done with this crew. It's 6,600 plus days since Essendon won a final. The Socceroos have made two World Cup knockout phases in between then. Since then, they've done an amazing job.
You know what the Socceroos are, Daniel? They are desert specialists.
They might just be. If you want to jump on the line this morning and let us know what you were doing for the Socceroos or how you watched it unfold or what you're feeling, let us know. 1-300-652-927 is the number to call. 0416-90-50-52 via the SMS. There's a few streaming through at the moment, as you can imagine, or tweet us at RSN Breakfast or RSN927. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of us this morning on what is... one of the great mornings for Australian sport. Quite remarkable. Considering that Tunisia beat France. And as Simon said, and I didn't know this, I hadn't done the numbers, but the game started at the same time.
Yeah.
Tunisia scored in the 58th minute. We scored in the 60th. So literally straight after they score, we score to give ourselves a chance, because the draw wouldn't have been enough.
No, on the back of that. I was about to say that that's what made it even more remarkable was, and I don't know whether they knew the scores at the time, but really going into the match, Australia only needed to draw.
Yeah, that's right.
But then all of a sudden they needed to win. And poor old Tunisia, they go home having beaten France and drawn with Denmark, and that's not enough to advance.
It's because they came up against the might of the Socceroos.
No, it's not Daniel Dor. It's because they're involved, like the Socceroos, in the group of death.
One stat that's come out this morning, which I don't think can be understated, and is an amazing achievement, really, when you think about it. Australia have led every game.
Yeah, that's right.
1-0, they've led every game. Now, France decided to put on four after the ninth minute, that first game, but they've led every game in this campaign. They had two clean sheets, which they haven't had since, well, ever in a World Cup. Back-to-back wins for the first time ever in a World Cup. It's some sort of performance.
I was thinking about this driving in, that there is something about the Socceroos that can unite everybody, you know, every 4 years for a World Cup. But there's no other team or no other sport that is as emotional as football is. And that's what I said to Simon before. When they lost to France 4-1, yeah, they wanted to rip the place apart.
It was an emotional response.
Despite the fact they're the reigning world champions and one of the best teams of all time, or all those players they've got, the overreaction to that loss was extraordinary. Now, it's not going to be an overreaction to what's now happened, because it is such a remarkable thing. But I think you've got to tap into that emotion now when it's positive emotion to get change, as opposed to negative emotion. That's why I asked that question to Simon, because I think, you know, it's that getting the connection to the people that are sports fans, not football fans, that are going to take, I think, football to the next level.
It's been some sort of morning.
Sutar recovers. And a break here for Riley McGree. It's on for Matthew Leckie. Matthew Leckie cuts back inside. One way, then the other. And he scores for Australia. Matthew Leckie embraces the moment for the Socceroos. Backus just needs to retain the ball. Moy. And there it is. Can you believe it? Written off too many times to remember. Australia has found a way. Found its way to the Elite 16 of world football. The country can keep on dreaming. Australia's jubilation and a slice of World Cup history. The Socceroos of 22 join the golden generation of 06.
Dave Bashir doing his best work on SBS this morning. Harry Kuehl was riding shotgun, and it was hard to contain his excitement as Australia went through to the knockout phase, as you heard. What a dramatic morning it's been for Australian sporting fans. Fed Square was off its chops early doors when that score was made 60 minutes into that contest between Australia and Denmark. And they are through. They are through to the World Cup knockout phase. It is quite something. And there's a very important 30 minutes coming up for Poland, Argentina, and while Saudis are gone, Mexico's got them covered, so that we don't have to worry about them. We'll be playing one of Poland or Argentina. At this stage, Argentina 1-0 up. It means they'll top the group and we'll play them at this stage. But we won't worry about that. We'll worry about the success of the Socceroos. We'll chat about it with Scotty Jamieson, who's been there and done that in the national colours. He's these days captain of Melbourne City, and I reckon he'd be up and about in Yarrawonga this morning. Hello, Scotty.
Good morning, team.
How are you, mate?
Well, I'm very well. I'm about to play a nice 18 holes at Yarrawonga. At the Bull Creek Golf Course. So I don't really care about the Socceroos, to be honest. I'm only joking. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant result. Something that I think every one of us probably thought wouldn't have happened, that we qualified out of this group. So, testament to Graham Arnold and the whole squad to come out of this group with two wins, one loss, is a fantastic achievement, and full credit to everyone involved.
So, no, as you said, no one expected this, and we spoke to Simon Hill earlier this morning, and not a person on the planet expected this to happen, but we've found a way to get through it. Have we downplayed perhaps the resilience and the tenacity of this group, do you reckon, Scotty, even after the win against Tunisia? I mean, Tunisia have come out and beat France this morning, which no one expected either, which made it a little bit stressful for a couple of minutes, but did we just downplay their tenacity and capacity to absorb the pressure in this tournament so far?
No, I don't necessarily think anyone downplayed it. I think we've always had the opinion that, and it goes with every Australian team, that they'll have the fight, the guts, the resilience. But I just feel the team as a whole has really gelled together and bonded together and found this, I guess, unique spirit to guide them through, but also played really good football. This morning, defended really, really well. Denmark, as the game went on, just seemed to panic more and more and started shelling long balls into the box, and Harry Suter just ate that up with Kai Rolls. But I just feel this group, you know, they talk it, and sometimes you don't believe when people speak about, you know, there's this brotherhood or bond, but to get through this group, you have to maybe believe what's been said from people like Graham Arnold about there's a real bond between these players.
Well, looks like Mexico are going to get through at this stage from the World Cup. Argentina have scored again against Poland 2-0. So Poland dropped to third in the group at this stage. Mexico go to second with their scoreline against the Saudi Arabians. So they look like they might go through. And as you said, Whitey, and they look like they're going to score Argentina, and they've done it again with a cracker.
Yeah, that was a good goal. There's no doubt about that. Hey, Scotty, I want to ask you about Graham Arnold. I know we spent a lot of time talking about a number of things at the Kelber Hotel last week, but just the critics that he's had and the way he's answered them, I'm fascinated in your views on Graham.
To be honest with you, I think he was very close to getting the sack. I mean, if you look at the way we qualified, the whole, I guess, feeling from outside of the Socceroos was that it was really a struggling camp. I have no doubt that he might have been close to getting the sack. But for him to claw himself back, regroup after a poor qualifying campaign, firstly to get past Peru, but then really to take on, you know, three very strong nations who I believe all sit in the top 20 of the world. If I might be wrong, I mean, Tunisia might not be, but France and Denmark, you know, are definitely in the top 20. For him to do that is a fantastic achievement, and he's proved a lot of critics wrong. You know, there's a lot of people out there probably would have said that Graham Arnold, you know, wouldn't have been in the job much longer, especially after, you know, losing to Japan and Saudi Arabia early in the, or later in the campaign. But full credit to him. You know, Arnie's done very well in the A-League. He enjoys the media. I think he plays up with it a little bit, which is fantastic. He gives you something. But, you know, for him to do what he's done and guide this team through to the next round is an unbelievable achievement.
So what's he like as a bloke? What, because he's in, I find him quite intriguing. He's great to talk to. He's very passionate and very, it has similar sort of qualities to Ange at times at the way he conducts himself publicly. But I'm interested in what is he like behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, my accounts have only come from playing against him, but also having friends that have played underneath him. Never worked with him, but the biggest thing I think that always comes out from Graham Arnold's teams and his way of coaching is the way he likes to bond his team together. You know, really create a bond and a form of brotherhood as such. And, you know, when his team was at Sydney FC, they were very tough, even Central Coast, you know, but this is a different beast being, you know, a national team. And to be able to like I said, to do what he's done, and you can't underestimate his tactics. You know, he was questioned very much so against France for being defensive as such. And Tunisia and Denmark, he's, in my opinion, you know, being more on the front foot. Although I was a little worried when he changed to a back three this morning and brought on Bailey Wright. But you live and die by your decisions, and he's living at large.
So we talked the other day, Scotty, about competition play, tournament play, and the fatigue factor that can play a part. I mean, there's been, I imagine, unbelievable adrenaline going through these guys, and they're riding that wave as well as putting out some quality on the park. Well, they've played three games in 9 days, as you said, and there's another game Sunday morning, 6 a.m. is the time for the first game of the knockout phase for us. So that's only another 3 days away. Can you see a requirement to change it up from a physical perspective, or would you just ride the wave and see what happens?
Well, how good am I? I said that last game prior to Denmark, and he played the same team, and all the boys ran it out. Fantastic. So, yeah, what do I know? It is interesting. I mean, I saw, obviously, the hero, Lex, you know, trying to run on the game with two bags of ice on his calf. Mitch Redruk looked like he was on his knees But this is a round of 32 in the World Cup. I don't think fatigue will necessarily hit anyone, especially if you're playing against Argentina, which is maybe possible, I think, or
yeah, likely.
Mexico. But I don't think you make changes now. I thought the game would have been Denmark just to freshen things up. But this is a do or die game again. But in the next round, I think he goes with whoever's putting their hand up to play and is available.
So Denmark had players today from Manchester United, from Barcelona, from Tottenham Hotspurs, but they didn't have any A-League players, Scott, and it was the real anchor for them today. They didn't pick any A-League players. It was an error from them. And what does it do for the local competition, the fact that we've got a few on board that are part of the team? Matthew Leckie, of course, scoring helps, and seven of the starting 11, I think, it started in the A-League. What does it do for the competition?
Oh, boys, I genuinely think now people have to properly start respecting the competition. There's been times over the years where the competition's killed itself in the foot, the way it's run or, the way it's done things. But the product's, being there and roundabout at a decent level, now we're starting to see it shine on the world stage. And I genuinely do believe that. The product is there. It's more so about how we show it and how we create an atmosphere for people to come watch it. But there's no doubt. You said the number there. The A-League is represented very well, not just in the starting 11, but also in the squad. And we have a match winner who's part of Melbourne City, but you can always come down and watch it at Amy Park. So there's no reason for people to turn their nose up against the A-League anymore. Just ask the Danish share players, see what they think about the A-League.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, so on Matthew Leckie, who's your teammate and a good friend of yours, he's now going to go down in Australian sporting folklore as the man that scored the goal to put the Socceroos through to the knockout phase. I mean, I'm sure you're really proud of him, but I asked you about Graham Arnold as a person, but Matthew Leckie as a person and how he's going to handle that now that he'll be remembered forever.
He's going to hate it. He does not want the attention one bit, gents. Lex is one of the most laid-back, easygoing characters you'll ever meet, with no fuss written across his forehead, because he just does not does not care to have any drama or anything in his life. And it's a testament to him, how he's carried himself over his career with, the exploits of playing in Germany for so long and being in the Socceroos for so long that nothing has fazed him, and I do mean it. This guy will not change one bit, and like I said, he will not enjoy the attention that's going to come his way. But it deserves to go his way because he scored an amazing goal, and in a way carried us through to the next round. But I'm super happy for him. He's joined Melbourne City last year and was a slow burner start because of he had to adapt his family to the country and was getting a lot of criticism, but it doesn't faze him one bit, and he's a national hero now, and more importantly, he's going to add to the Melbourne City firm kitty because he's qualified to the next round, and he's missing from our training now. So more importantly, it's more better for Melbourne City rather than anyone else.
Well, it's been some sort of morning. What are you doing in Yarrawonga?
So I'm staying at the Siebel Hotel. They've invited a few of us down here to a part of Lotus Living just to get a part of it and come down and see the beautiful facilities here and play some golf with the Black Bull. So really looking forward to having a hit. It's probably my first in a while, but looking forward to getting out this morning and doing a few filming content, but then getting on the course and ripping it up and buying 100 balls to cater for losing 100.
It's a good little place up there, actually. There's a nice little place to have breakfast on the water, and
beautiful.
Black Bull's a good
golf
course.
Mate. It truly is. We had a beautiful dinner here last night, and obviously had to watch the Socceroos this morning, so a bit sleep-deprived, but I've got a fair few excuses in case the golf game's terrible, but we'll dress well and then go from there.
You will dress well.
You'll be looking magnificent. The Adidas kit, don't worry about that. You'll be looking very, very sharp and putting a
bit on the sponsors.
Bit on the socials too, make sure about that. Scotty, great to chat to you, mate. It's been some sort of morning for all football fans and hopefully sports fans in Australia as well. And long may it continue Sunday morning, 6 a.m. against, it looks like, Argentina at this stage, mate. Go get him and swing well today, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, boys. Hopefully speak to you Monday morning and we'll be cheering it on again, another win.
You're a great man. Scotty Jamieson, captain of Melbourne City, with us to celebrate the Socceroos' performance this morning, 1-0 over Denmark to get through the qualification of the knockout phase. which is magnificent. Now, the BBC have given me a bum steer here, I reckon.
Oh.
Well, it's not a massive problem. That goal to Argentina, according to the BBC, put Mexico second and Poland third, but has been picked up off the SMS. At this stage, both teams the same points, same goal difference, same goals for, same goals against, meaning the least number of yellow cards will go through, and that currently is Poland. They've got four, and Mexico's got seven for the campaign.
So they might have a super over, or who's a
couple from the spot?
Who's kicked the most sixes?
Couple from the spot.
Most boundaries.
So that's the situation as it sits. That currently Poland will go through according to that that formula at this stage, unless Argentina score again or Mexico score again with about 15 minutes to go in both those games.
So Poland will play France?
Poland will play, yeah, France, yeah. Mm. Yep. So we play the top-ranked team because we finished second, and the top-ranked team with us, which is France, will play the second-ranked team, which will be, at this stage, Poland.
It's the latest TAB update.
Yes, it is, and on a big morning for Australian sport, I reckon there'll be plenty of activity going on at tab.com.au. Jamie Rogers is in charge there, leading all things magnificent over there. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Harf. How are you?
Oh, I'm going very well. How could you not? It's magnificent. The Socceroos are through, Jamie.
Oh, what a sensational start to the day. They've certainly proved all the doubters wrong, and any negative headlines, they've shown everyone what they're capable of doing. So winning 1-0, that was paying $17 this morning. And for Australia to reach the final 16 was $2.65. Matthew Lecky was $7 to score a goal. So now we face Argentina. I was just messaging the traders back in Sydney to see when that market's going to be up, but that should be up very shortly. So we'll keep all your listeners updated on when the markets are that for there. But even Tunisia to win this morning, that was $15.
Yeah.
That was a big upset as well. So I think we all had to hold our breath for a second when Tunisia did get that score. But anyway, it's exciting.
Well,
we're on to the round of 16.
Yes, we were $300 yesterday to take out the World Cup. I think there might be a few nibbles at that sort of market, Jamie.
Well, do you know what, Harf? They actually started seeing nibbles when it went out to, after we lost to France and we shot out to $400, we started seeing some nibbles then. We're now into $101, so we're really trimmed up going into this round of 16, and I guarantee you we will be seeing support at that price, because the Socceroos, I know when we spoke and I said that the early money was for Denmark, but the patriotic money always does come through, and that was exactly the story with the Socceroos. They were so well backed for this morning, and it will be a similar story when they go into their next match against Argentina.
So we will play Argentina 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. And Poland are through. Mexico, Gornski. Poland through to take on France in the other side of the draw, other part of the draw for our group. So that's what's happening.
Would you have preferred Argentina or Poland?
No, Poland. Argentina are pretty bloody good, Jamie.
I know. When I was watching that match, I thought, I really hoped that Poland would win. But imagine, though, for the Socceroos, they're playing against such superstars of Argentina. What an awesome thing to do.
Well, you got to beat it to win them. You got to beat all the good ones to win them. So you might as well start in the first round of the knockout phase.
Yes, so exactly.
What about tomorrow's games? We've got a bit going on tomorrow too.
Yeah, there's still some games in the morning. So Canada are the outsiders against Morocco. Croatia, it's not actually much separating these two. Croatia are 260 and Belgium are 270 with the draw at 340. And then Germany and Spain are both very short in their respective matches. And they've actually both been seeing support. So Germany face Costa Rica and Spain face Japan.
Righto, that's tomorrow in the World Cup, but Australia through to the next phase, take on Argentina, 6 a.m. on Sunday. What about the NBL tonight? What's happening in the hoops?
Well, we've got a doubleheader tonight, Harf. So it starts at 5:30 with New Zealand, the favourite way. They are the ladder leaders, but Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, they're fourth on the ladder, and they're the outsiders at $2.55. And the support has come through for the Breakers, in particular at the 4.5 line, where they're currently at $1.85. And the second match is Brisbane up against Perth. And this one's just interesting in terms of, like, when you look at these squads on paper, Harf, they're both so talented, but they just haven't quite performed to their best right now. So Brisbane at $2.60. They've seen absolutely no support at this stage, with Perth at $1.48. And where Perth's also really popular is to cover that 4.5 line. They're currently at $1.85.
And we're going to talk to Ryan Harris very shortly about the test match in Perth. Day one went the way of the Aussies. They were pretty short to win it yesterday. What's that done to the market?
Yeah, well, it's even shorter now. I heard your interview with Nicole, and she summed it up very well in that there was no support at all for the West Indies, and they've just drifted out now to $51 Australia into $1.07. The draw's at $9, but as you can imagine, it's just all one-way traffic towards the Aussies, and brilliant Manus Labuschagne unbeaten on 154. And now if we flick the market over to the most wickets, Pat Cummins is at the favourite way for $3, Josh Hazlewood at $3.50, or Mitchell Starc at $3.60. So hopefully another big day for the Aussies ahead.
A lot to look forward to in the world of sports. We're celebrating the Socceroos today. Jamie, always a pleasure. We'll catch you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Jamie Rogers.
It's the latest TAB update.
Yeah, we just had that. Thanks very much there. Plenty of sports, plenty of markets, tab.com.au. Press any button you like, Trent. No worries. No worries about that.
It's amazing what happens when Trent comes in and the owl goes out. Cause
that's right. The owl's gone home and Trent's come in and butchered everything. Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious. Now, Dom Malesi from the Bulldogs still to come to wrap up their draft hand after the last couple of days. Don't forget Matty Stewart hosting Racing Pulse from 8:30 this morning as well, doing great things. But we want to focus on the test. We just had a chat to Jamie about the markets. Well, unbackable, the Aussies, to win the test. Possibly the series in the back of it. But let's see what Ryan Harris thinks about all that sort of stuff. He knows a fair bit about first tests of the summer and what the momentum and adrenaline can do for you. He's on the line now. Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Great to have you with us. Now, day one, very much in our favour. But what did you think when you saw that wicket at the start of the day's play yesterday?
Well, it was a little bit, obviously, green tinge to it. I thought it probably would have offered a little bit more in that first hour. I thought West Indies were really good early with the ball. I thought they put enough in the right spot, obviously. With that wicket the way it was, I just thought it would have offered a little bit more. But, we saw the early wicket of Warner, which was disappointing. But, we just saw Manus come out and do what he does best and with Usman and put on a really good partnership and soak up the pressure. And that's what Manus is so good at. To be able to bat through about the whole day virtually and do what he did was outstanding.
They talked on the coverage on Fox a fair bit yesterday about the discipline of the batsmen. Outside of sort of Davey Warner, who was a bit flamboyant early doors, all the others were really disciplined. They left a lot of balls. They didn't hit balls they didn't need to play. And as a result, that we got the result we did, 2 for 293. Is that, what in your eyes, what you saw as well?
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of balls there that nipped around. I thought, as I said, they bowled really well. Kemo Roach has been over here a few times, so a bit of success in Perth. I thought he was good. And then young Jaden Sills was, and Azari Joseph were good early. I think, 293 in a day is probably this day and age. Everyone looks at that and goes, oh, it's a bit slow, which, in theory it might be. But to battle through like they did, you absorb that pressure, be really watchful, is a hard thing to do. Not that I spent too many long innings out the middle, but the pressure you've got to try and build as a bowler, if you're bowling your good balls and then leaving them or keeping them out, it gets more, more and more frustrating. So I think that's what we saw with the West Indies bowlers. They probably got a little bit frustrated towards that back end of the day and probably legged a few runs and undid a little bit of the good work they did early. But that's the thing you talk about as a batting unit. You get in early, you work hard, get the bowlers nice and tight into their fourth and fifth spells, and then the back end of the day you cash in. I think we saw a bit of that yesterday.
We've seen this so many times, Ryan, when the touring teams come out, whether it be the Gabba or the Wacker, they do tend to bowl too short. And we saw that a bit yesterday, that when they bowled it full, you just thought, oh, they're a bit of a chance here. And we saw that with certainly the two wickets to fall. But generally speaking, not a lot of balls hit the stumps. And we did see the Australian players be able to leave a lot of balls. And Labuschagne spoke about that in these conditions, knowing where your stumps are and trying to leave as much as possible.
Yeah, and that's the great thing that, we have these two wickets, the Gabba and the Wacker, we should be starting here in Brisbane, in my opinion, but we're starting on a bouncy wicket, and that's the trick for these touring sides, as you say. You've just got to hit the stumps, and you've got to have the courage as a bowler to be, we used to talk about getting hit down the ground. If you're getting driven down the ground or through cover, you're in the game. And as you say, you don't see a lot of those teams have that courage when they come here and do that. So, and again, as a batting unit, that's what you want. You want to get in, you want to be able to leave a few balls, get the pace of the wicket, get the pace of the game, and they, as you mentioned, then they did that too much. They didn't ask many questions or enough questions of the batsman. Didn't put enough on the stumps. I don't know the percentage of the balls in the stumps, but at 1-0 it wasn't a lot. So when you're not doing that, it allows the batting side to dictate and get and the batters to get set. And that, as I said, that makes it harder because if you're not putting pressure on them and they're getting themselves in, you're tiring as a bowler. And as I said before, the back end of the day becomes, especially on a hot day, which it was nice and warm yesterday. That's when the batters tend to cash in.
I'd love you to expand a little bit more about the length to bowl in Australian conditions, particularly at, say, Perth or Brisbane, because you were someone that bowled very quickly but always bowled the ball a lot fuller. So now even in the coaching you do and the work you've done with the younger players, there is that propensity, even from Australian players, to bowl that back of the length. Because that's kind of what McGrath did and that's kind of what we did for Australian cricket for a long time, but just bowling that little bit fuller.
Yeah, it's an art to do. It's obviously just your release points, obviously a little bit different and being able to do it and still, you know, not serve up half volleys. That's the sort of mentality I used to have. And I sort of modelled a little bit on Peter Siddle, to be honest. I mean, he was one that did come in and just bash a hard length. And remember years ago, Craig McDermott really ripping into him about bowling fuller. And once you bowl fuller, one thing I teach now, and I model it back on my game, is when you get a new ball, you've got to use that new ball. As we see this day and age, the balls don't last very long at all. So you've got to try and bring in every mode of dismissal. And that's hitting the stumps. It's got to be LB, nicks, bolts. That's the only way you're going to get early wickets. And sometimes you've got to over-attack at times, but you've got to find a way to attack without, you know, leaking runs as well. So that's probably a bit contradictive. But you know, my goal is just to try and hit the stumps and hit the front pad or get to the point of the length where everyone talks about the top of off. That's the bowl top of off. It's an easy thing to do. But I always used to aim an inch under. And the other thing about that, and it sounds all a bit dramatic, but I'd also let the umpire know that the ball's not going over. So if it didn't hit the pad, I'd be screaming at him, appealing. So, but that was my mentality. And like I said before, especially on the two wickets, the Gabba and the Wacker, if I'm getting driven, my three or four slips that I have there, that they're in the game as well. So that's the courage. As I said before, you've got to have a bit of courage. You've probably got to put your ego away and just, you know, cop that you might get hit down the ground, or you might get hit through cover. But in saying that, you're bringing just about every mode of dismissal into the game. And as an opening bowler, that was my job, and is to take early wickets and make inroads into the top order.
It was a big day for the Windies in many ways yesterday. It didn't go their way, but the body language started to deteriorate as the day drew on, and you know, it's 2 for 293, 2 for 300 effectively, and they're staring down the barrel of a significant first innings chase. What do you expect from them today?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what it is. It's a tough day, especially when it's hot, waking up, and you know you've got another 8 wickets to get as a bowler. And yeah, I've looked at the numbers before. Kemo Roach bowled 18. Zari Joseph bowled 16. So the cobwebs, you've got to get up early, get yourself moving, because I know I did, not everyone, but I used to wake up very stiff after a long day bowling. So you've got to have that opportunity. Make sure you give yourself that opportunity. You know, if there's anything in the wicket it's going to be in the morning sessions with the covers being on it. Obviously, it is pretty warm and dry over there, but if there's any moisture, it's going to be the first thing in the morning. So you just got to come out and make sure that you're hitting the stumps and giving yourself every opportunity to take those wickets. You know, the batters will have to start again. That's the old cliche. You've got to get out there and start again. So you've just got to make sure that you're putting pressure on those batters and put enough balls in the right area. And that's what they're going to have to do. Otherwise, it's going to be a big first innings total for Australia. And that's obviously, you know, it's not what you want as a bowling unit. So I agree. I think their body language dropped a bit yesterday, and that's, you know, they've got to make sure that they start, you know, this morning fresh and be up and about and saving every run and putting pressure on the Australian batters.
What's the number, do you reckon, Andrew McDonald and Pat Cummins are talking about this morning?
I was thinking about that this morning and last night. It's one of those where do we go big and bat once and back our bowlers to rip through and you know, cheaply, or you know, do we get to about 450, 500? And you know, obviously still go hard to try and bat once, but you know, if you go to 550, 600, and you do have to bowl, you know, they do get a couple of partnerships and you have to bowl, you know, 100 plus overs, it becomes a long couple of days. So I would say probably 450, 500. I was never a captain, so I was hopeless at these things. But I would say 450, 500 would be enough. And as I said, if the bowlers are good, well, they're good enough, they'll make inroads early and hopefully, again, only have to bat once.
Well, a lot to look forward to from an Australian perspective. Day two is a very interesting day affair in any test match. But today, very much in favour of the home side as we see what the West Indies can bring in the first test of the series. Always appreciate chatting to you, Ryan. We look forward to a great test match and a great series and great analyst work from you as well. Appreciate it.
No worries, boys. Thank you.
You're a good man. Ryan Harris.